Hey, everybody, it's Devin.
And Kate.
Welcome to Med Crimes.
On YouTube. Dreams do come true.
Shabam.
Shabam.
I don't know if I ever dreamed about being on YouTube.
I mean, it's a pretty attainable dream.
I mean,
anybody can be on YouTube.
Exactly.
But for us, having a podcast that is reaching some success and now being able to share it in video format
to bring our podcast to YouTube
for
is
real.
A dream.
That is literally a dream.
It's amazing.
I literally have had so much fun. Just like
you've done phenomenal with
setting
the set.
This up.
That's been like my word so far of like our promo is just phenomenal.
Phenomenal.
You've put your sweat, your heart and soul.
I have.
Your fingernails.
My fingernails.
Into all the clips.
So that was a whole story. And if you want to see the details of me setting it up, feel free to check out our Patreon page because it's all like very meticulously video cataloged on there.
Sure is. Sure is.
But I loved every minute of it, honestly, because I knew that, you know, we'd be able to reach more people and, you know, make more connections. And that's
I mean,
what it's all about.
And so speaking of Patreon page, this has only happened because of you.
Literally.
Our Patreons.
Oh, my goodness.
We would not have been able to bring any of this to go to the YouTube site and all of that. It would not have happened if it wasn't for you.
No, you guys are literally why any of this is here. And
you're
supporting
these two Joe Schmoes.
We're nothing.
Who are you? What?
I've never met this woman.
Never.
This is weird.
Strangers in a basement.
This whole thing is very bizarre.
That's a murder mystery.
Yes, it is. It's a med crime.
It is. It is. And thank you for bearing with us during our break.
Mm-hmm.
We needed it. Just to slow down, be with the family, mm-hmm. and to just like enjoy that blissful sacred mm-hmm. holiday time.
We've some things have happened over break. You know, obviously we did this and this was all cataloged, but we all got to spend some great time with our families. There were a couple losses in my family. I had to say goodbye to my beloved pet Molly,
the geriatric pet we talked about with
COPD. Yes, she did finally have to.
So we lost a cast member.
We lost
because
a
she
cast
was a
member.
Part of the show and her.
Yep.
Her.
Yes, I know the constant interruptions, the amount of coughing I had to edit out. Poor Smalls, who was
Rest
with us
peace.
For 15 years, finally did pass away, and that was really, really sad. We're all still very sad about it. We do have a new family member upstairs. We got a little Frenchie named Stella,
and I will soon in the next coming months have a new member of our family because I did mention on one of the episodes a few months ago that we were starting the potty training journey.
Yes,
and I am so happy that he has flipped a switch. And he is like, he is there.
Isn't it funny how that just happens?
We like, took him today on his, you do this, you get this.
Yep.
So we did his celebration trip today. And so now that we're really kind of like, okay, I don't want to potty train a fur baby while I'm doing my other baby.
Which is fair.
So now we are back in the hunt of extending our family.
Which is, so amazing, which is so amazing. Which is
so
amazing.
Yeah.
And I'm so psyched for you because like I love dogs and I love everything about dogs.
It's gonna come.
The puppies are the best.
It's coming.
And then my husband's family had a death in the family recently. And of course, it seems like with my husband's family, all the bad things tend to happen around the holiday season.
Right.
So that's been really, really tough. We were glad that we had this break so that, you know, we could kind of process and be mm-hmm. together as a family. And now we are ready to come back and just have these nice cathartic little sessions with you guys because we kind of live for that shit. I'm not going to lie.
We're still two moms in a basement.
Still.
We're just looking a little bit more fancier.
We're just bougier now.
Yep.
It's bougie.
Yep. We're still in our sweats, but we wear makeup with our sweats.
Yeah. There's makeup with the sweats. Exactly. Speaking of sweats, I have me.
Just wearing some merch.
A little bit of merch here. This is my favorite piece that we did, which is the Oh My Heart logo. I don't know if you can see it. Hopefully you can see it. I will link it in the description of the video and in the show notes.
Yeah.
MedCrimesPodShop.com. Check it out. Patreons get 10% off
Yeah. Ooh.
Patreons get 10% off.
So speaking of the Patreons.
Oh my God. We have so many. I literally thought, okay, I'd never imagined we would get so much while we were on a break. You guys amaze me. It
we
just,
hit
it
a milestone and hit that Patreon number 100.
Woohoo!
Patreon number 100.
Yeah, buddy.
So did we do a giveaway for that person?
I think we should. We did not, but we should.
We said we would we when said we hit would. Number 100, so it's coming to you.
It's coming to you. I will message you lucky number 100.
Lucky number 100.
Rare.
Here is our list.
Look how long it is.
It has never been so long.
Oh my God.
We are so happy.
I'm so psyched.
First and foremost, Marissa Peterson.
Hey, hey.
Hey, hey, Marissa. And Katie.
Katie, with the one name.
Katie,
you know
Katie.
How we. You know how we feel about
Katie,
that.
Katie.
Shannon Hugh.
Hi, Shannon.
Hey, hey, Shannon Hugh.
Holly Bramer.
Holly Bramer.
Thank you, Holly.
Rare. Okay.
Bailey Nathan.
Bailey
you're
Nathan.
You're a rejoin.
Girl, you're a rejoin. We
Thank
love a
you.
Rejoin. This is amazing.
Welcome back.
Angela Mann.
Hi, Angela.
Hey, girl. Hey.
Jeanette Gervais.
Jeanette Gervais.
I love your name.
Rare. Yas. Kathleen. Oh, sorry. Sorry. Catherine Hunter, I love your name because that's my name.
How could you screw that up?
How could I screw any of this up?
How could you screw that up?
And it's happening still somehow.
Cheryl Hill.
Okay, Cheryl. Okay, Cheryl.
Okay, Cheryl. I didn't screw that up.
No, you didn't. Jessica Shelton.
Hi, Jessica.
Hey, girl. We love
you. We love the Jessicas.
I know.
Or the Jessicas love us.
There's so many of you. We love this.
Janelle Green.
Yeah, Janelle Green. Yes.
Welcome.
Yeah.
Kayla Butterfield.
Okay.
Okay, Kayla Butterfield.
We'll love ya. Alexis Shetterly. That is a book character if I've ever heard one.
That is a book character.
Okay.
A little bit of Alexis.
La 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 la. That was necessary.
Jessica Daniel.
Okay, Jessica.
Or Jessica Danielle.
Maybe. Did you screw that one up?
Probably.
It's Jessica
it's
Danielle.
It's spelled like Danielle. Yes. So we're going with that one.
Okay, Jessica Danielle.
And last but not least.
Gail Cushing.
Thanks, mother.
Thanks, mom.
The mother from another mother.
Oh my God. You guys. I cannot, still All cannot
you,
even believe.
That list. We've never, like, it's
Literally.
Wonderful.
Literally. It's, you know what you guys
we're
are?
We're blessed.
We are blessed. What you guys are fawns. Ooh. So you know, like a fawn is like a mythical creature that's like part deer,
also,
part human.
But also not mythical. There are fawns.
Okay. You're thinking of baby deers.
Yes.
I'm talking about the mythical. And why wouldn't she be? I'm talking about the mythical creatures, the fawns, which are F-A-U-N, spelled F-A-U-N. And they are Fair. Like half human, half deer, and they frolic. There's frolicking.
Ooh.
They're also mischievous. And probably Ooh. Sexy.
I think that describes all of you.
Yes.
Mischievous and sexy.
Probably sexy.
That's us.
That's us. Probably sexy. Oh my God. We love you guys.
Thank you
Bam.
All of you. Thank you all of you.
Y'all are the best.
You're amazing.
Our Patreons have spoken too. Speaking of Patreons, because we are doing a beautiful series/few episodes on the STI experiments conducted by the United States in Guatemala, which is, I had read about it just briefly, but the inhumanity of this whole situation is like, it's insane. It is bonkers. The another like ridiculous shit mark on the history of the United States. I'm telling you.
Like, what are we doing?
What are we doing? What did we
what
do?
What are we doing?
Why is this part of our history? This is like kind of alarming. I'm not going to lie. For the first time of season 3, without further ado.
Mid crimes.
So just as a sort of a quick overview of what all of this is. Beginning in 1946, the U.S. government immorally engaged in research and experiments in which more than 5,000 uninformed and unconsenting Guatemalan people and soldiers for the United States were intentionally infected with a bacteria that causes sexually transmitted infections.
My freaking word.
And this happened in 1946 to 1948. Trigger warning, we are going to be obviously discussing sexually transmitted infections. We're going to get a little detailed because we talk about the signs and symptoms.
Okay.
Additionally, we're going to be discussing themes of prostitution, sex work, themes of child sex work, child prostitution. There are parts of this that do get pretty heavy, and also racially motivated crime. I do also want to point out that there's like a lot of stigma and shame around sexually transmitted infections. And I hope that no one thinks that we're perpetuating that, because a lot of the STIs that we're going to talk about today are ones that are very treatable and don't have to be a big deal as long as you get treatment and are careful. There are, of course, STIs that are a lot more severe, like your like your HIV and the viral things that are chronic. But the ones
and
that
those that are untreated.
Of course. Yes, exactly. Yeah. So I just wanted to make sure that nobody thinks that we're adding fuel to the shame fire around STIs. There's really nothing shameful about it. It's just a thing that happens. And a lot of them are, you know, there's so many treatments available nowadays that.
But also understand the feeling that when you think you have one. You do feel, you know what I mean?
Yes.
It's just that natural.
Exactly. You do. It's just one of those things that, you know, you feel shame, but there's really no need to. Mm-hmm. And like, for the love of God, if you hear us describe some of these things and think, you know, maybe I have an STI and maybe I need to go get treated, please just go get checked out. No one's going to like shame you for that. Like, just they'll take care of you and send you on your way. And it doesn't have to be a big deal.
Open and honest. I got checked out once.
Yeah.
She was by my side. I felt the shame that day.
Yes, exactly. But you were reassured and you did the right thing. And we're going to talk about the facts. This is a safe space. We're not judging anybody, okay?
This flowered wall
is
the safe space.
This is the safe hedge that we were sitting in front of. We're in front of the safe hedge. So, without further ado. We're going to start by talking about, like, the climate at the time. Of course, we got to set the scene a little
bit. We have to know what's going on.
So, now, medicine is advancing. This is the early to mid-1940s that we're in. So, World War II, is sort of just winding down.
We're, like,
a little
early
bit. We're, like, early post-World War II. Penicillin had been discovered about 15 years prior to this. And this was a huge change and discovery on the forefront of medicine, because prior to discovering penicillin, we had no real way of treating bacterial infections aside from supportively. And sometimes that worked and sometimes people died.
Correct.
So this really changed a lot of, you know,
the science.
You finally
had something that could kill something.
Exactly. So this was huge. Things that were not previously treatable at all are now all of a sudden very simply treatable. So, like, this was a massive, massive thing. And now they're trying to sort of feel out what penicillin is effective against. Because as we know, you know, there are certain bacteria that would be very susceptible, especially back in this day. And now we have so many bacteria that are, you know, not susceptible to anything. And it can be very scary.
That's a whole nother med cream sometimes.
That's a whole nother situation. Antibiotic stewardship, am I right? But this really changed the whole medical philosophy. And now they're like, okay, what can we use penicillin for? Because there's so many things. That, you know, we couldn't treat before, and, you know.
And can it be broadly used? Is it the one-off?
Exactly,
you know?
Exactly. So that's sort of where we're at in terms of medicine. Now, the concern specifically around sexually transmitted infections started to become more prevalent around this time. And you might be wondering what led the U.S. government to want to become involved in this, because it seems like such a weird thing. So specifically STIs, syphilis, and gonorrhea are the ones that were of particular concern. First off, around the time of the World War, the U.S. had sent a lot of troops that were traveling all around the world routinely in service of their country. And condoms and prophylaxis were not a huge thing because it wasn't really well known about, and there wasn't much on the market that was readily available.
Right.
So these soldiers are just like kind
going
of
out.
Going out.
Going out there.
Getting some.
Releasing the tension.
Really? Releasing the tension. Just like.
Letting off steam.
They're out having sex, and they are getting these STIs like wildfire. And that becomes the responsibility of the United States from a financial standpoint. So, you know, the U.S. is responsible for all of the medical care of these soldiers. And these, you know, these diseases, if they are, you know, if they are treated early, are totally curable.
Could say the government got into it for a good, valid 100% reason.
100% they did.
And then we just make it inhumane.
Exactly. So by the early 1940s, it was estimated that venereal diseases would affect around 350,000 soldiers, United States soldiers. 350,000.
Wow.
Essentially, that would equate to eliminating around two entire armed divisions for an entire year.
Whoa.
From the U.S. military. The cost of that to the U.S. military is the equivalent of around $34 million a year in their investments. So,
yep.
When cumulative, I mean, that becomes yep. more of a priority and an urgency, right? Yes. Because they're already putting all of their resources into fighting this world war.
Right.
And recovering from that. And we're losing money because these soldiers
and
are.
You know, and there's so many different things that they need for their medical care.
Yes.
Do we have to use money on,
yes,
you know what
exactly.
I mean?
Yeah. When, you know, it,
from
like,
their wounds and their injuries.
Exactly.
What about this they didn't expect?
Exactly. And one interesting anecdote that I found was that prior to these studies about the efficacy of penicillin specifically on STIs was some of the methods of prophylaxis, quote unquote, that they had back then were like a little wild. One of them in particular was really intense. There was a really intense and really painful regimen in which soldiers were getting injections of silver protonate into their penises to prevent.
I mean,
to prevent.
If you want to protect it.
Is it werewolves?
Do you go to the source?
Is this werewolves? That's silver.
I mean,
So it's obvious why the old white men who are heading up the government are like, we need to find a better way because this fucking hurts.
Not a fan.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, that's the stuff that
give me a pill.
Give me a pill to take.
Silver in my penis.
Exactly.
I'm
so.
Done with.
The big question was like, okay, we're getting some new evidence that penicillin can treat syphilis and gonorrhea. That's mm-hmm. great. But what can we do to prevent it from happening in the first place?
Right, right.
Is there a prophylactic dose or route? Or is there a post-exposure dose or route that would be effective? So those mm-hmm. were the big questions specifically that they wanted answered.
Again,
if that
not
makes
knowing
sense.
About condoms and
exactly.
all that other stuff.
Exactly. Yeah. So since the early 20th century, research had been conducted using rabbits. So rabbits were the big thing on what people were using to test the efficacy of
oh, wow.
antibiotics on a number of different bacterial infections, okay. including...
Poor little bunnies.
I know. And but the rationale behind rabbits was that, especially with STIs, bunnies have a lot of sex. So they would infect these bunnies.
Valid.
Let them go do their bunny thing, which is to have sex.
That's where the whole jackrabbit thing came from.
What jackrabbit thing are you referring to?
Going at it like jackrabbits? Or, I mean, this can't be new. Anybody?
Yeah, sure.
Going at it like jackrabbits?
I've not heard jackrabbits. I've heard like bunnies or like rabbits. Like, I don't know, jackrabbits?
Like super fast?
I'm assuming jackrabbits do it similarly to standard
rabbits.
We're
going to get kicked off YouTube on
yes,
episode
we are.
One.
We're done. You guys, this is ridiculous. You're done. So, sorry, where was I? This is one of those moments, guys.
Jackrabbits.
Okay. Rabbits, they would infect, like inject syringes full of syphilis, gonorrhea, or other infections, and then they would test the transmission, try to get a sense of what the incubation period is, and then the efficacy of certain treatments.
And then how transmissible is it?
Exactly.
Is it, yeah.
Another treatment that was commonly used prior to penicillin for syphilis in particular was called arsphenamine. And that was a really intense regimen that also had some very painful side effects, and it did not work very well. And it was a chemical or a drug that is really like not used anymore. And I actually didn't really know much about it at all until I started reading this. But it had,
I hadn't heard of it.
Cardiac side effects, nephrotoxicity, nerve and muscle toxicity. So like if you dose it incorrectly,
kills your kidneys.
It will kill the bacteria, yeah. Sure, but it will also kill literally everything
all
else.
All your organs. And yeah.
So fell out of favor very quickly when it was discovered that penicillin was a better treatment for that.
Okay.
And they were having a lot of success treating the rabbits with penicillin. So this was around 1943, 1944, when they started to get that good data using the rabbits on treating syphilis and gonorrhea specifically with penicillin and having that good response. So the next step is we got to start testing this on humans. Where do we start with that? Because what they want to, again, you know, primarily they want to protect their troops. But also the media is starting to get wind of these STIs that are just becoming more rampant.
And I'm sure so. Okay, so I can see where dark road we're going down with this. Because yeah. They probably weren't getting a lot of volunteers.
Mm-mm.
I think I have an STI.
Yes.
Check me out. Put me in this trial.
Exactly.
And especially if all of them were manly soldiers, right?
Exactly. Like, all right. No one wants to admit that they have like green stuff coming out of the tip of their
especially
penis.
Especially in the 40s. Yeah. I mean,
it's a tough time.
Non-marital sex was not, you know, like it was, yeah.
Among soldiers, like, you know, exactly. And then like these soldiers are sometimes, you know, leaving their wives and families at home and then like getting infected with stuff when they're on a tour. And it's like, well, so it's like the whole thing. We're going to get a little bit into the pathology of these specific STIs that we're talking about. So if it bothers you that we're going to be talking about like penises and vaginas a little bit, you can skip ahead, you know, several minutes and then we should be clear of that. We're going to talk first about syphilis. Syphilis was of particular concern because due to its nature and the fact that most infections are completely asymptomatic and unrecognized at first.
I'm getting cuddlier.
Yeah, girl.
It gets me.
Yeah. The fact that you're asymptomatic for as long as years with syphilis before it can cause many like actual
physical effects
symptoms.
For you to know.
There's very vague physical symptoms at first, and we're going to talk about it. But if it's allowed to progress untreated, it can cause extremely severe health issues years down the road.
I knew that it caused if it went untreated, but I guess I didn't realize that you could be asymptomatic for so long.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
I knew the significant health effects it could do if you didn't treat it. But.
Exactly. So syphilis is fully preventable and curable bacterial sexually transmitted infection. Like I said, if it progresses and is untreated, it can cause very serious health issues and even death. The World Health Organization estimates that about 7.1 million adults between 15 and 49 years old acquired syphilis in 2020. That was like the last big data collection of that.
The year we were not touching each other.
Yes.
Go figure.
Go figure.
Go figure.
So that was a slow year. The 7.1 million adults was the slow year. People who are most at risk are individuals who engage in sex with men. So regardless of what gender you are, if you're engaging in sex with someone with male parts, you're at most risk for developing syphilis. So the bacteria that causes syphilis is called Treponemia pallidum, and it is transmitted during oral, anal, or vaginal sex. It can also be transmitted to a baby if they're in utero and a pregnant woman is infected. And then years and years ago, before we did screening, through blood transfusions. But now that we screen all the blood that we have, you know, that the chances of that are extremely low.
Right.
Syphilis during pregnancy can be particularly devastating as it can lead to stillbirth or newborn death. So babies being born with active syphilis infections also can happen. And then, you know, their fallout is the same as an adult who would have it. So syphilis. No, you're good. You're good. Syphilis infections.
You're
going to
get all the bloopers.
Yes, you are. Syphilis infections occur in stages. So the first stage is known as primary syphilis. This lasts around the first 21 days of infection. So it's characterized by a round, painless, and usually firm sore or canker, like an open sore, that appears on or around the genitals, the mouth, or the anus, which is usually the, like, it will occur on or around the site of infection, however it was transmitted.
Right.
Some people, because they're completely painless and can be, like, hidden in these areas, don't even know it's there.
Right.
It's completely painless. They get, like, a little sore. That's it. In the first 21 days. Typically, it heals itself in around 3 days to 10 days. From there, if still untreated, syphilis progresses to secondary syphilis. At this stage, typically people develop this rash, which is non-itchy, non-painful, again, asymptomatic, just a visual thing. Typically on the palms of the hands, the soles of the feet, along with white or gray lesions, which can start appearing in the warm or moist areas, such as the genitals and the mouth.
Okay.
So
dark, wet places.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. So people tend to develop these skin changes, but then these skin changes, without any treatment whatsoever, go away on their own, like within a few days, typically. So
without treatment.
Without treatment. Again, very vague symptom that a lot of people might write off as a viral process. Well, right. Or
you're like, okay, an allergy. Like, I don't know what this is, but it's gone.
But
like,
it's gone. Okay, so no. Problem solved. Exactly. Right. So this is what I'm talking about when I say it's very insidious, mm-hmm. right? Because even, you know, you get this little sore that goes away. Maybe you notice it, maybe you don't. And then, like, maybe you get a rash, but it goes away in a couple of days and I had no symptoms whatsoever. It was probably a reaction to something. Big deal, you know? So the fact is, even if you're not having any symptoms, syphilis is very contagious, very contagious with sexual contact.
Right.
So, you know, your rash goes away. You kind of consider the matter closed and write it off as whatever. And following secondary syphilis, syphilis will go latent for a little period of time. And this often has no symptoms whatsoever and is left to progress typically for years, many years. Once you reach the third and final stage, tertiary syphilis, is when you start seeing organ damage, brain damage, and severe symptoms that can lead to death. It can lead to brain and cardiovascular diseases, among other conditions. It can lead to dementia. I've actually seen in the hospital somebody get admitted, an older woman, with like pretty sudden and severe mental status changes. We thought maybe it was just like sort of a slowly progressing cognitive decline that then took sort of a sharp turn.
Wow.
Then my attending thought, you know, to ask about, you know, could this be something else? Because it just seems so abrupt and, you know, so weird. And, you know, she has
obviously thinking infection at that point.
Exactly. And then she also had a little bit of a kidney injury and some other like little, you know, things that were sort of starting to go wrong all at once. So on a whim, they tested for syphilis and it was positive. She had latent syphilis that then progressed into tertiary syphilis. And this brain damage, this dementia that resulted, was irreversible.
Oh, no.
Completely irreversible.
Oh, no.
So it can atrophy brain tissue to the point where you get seizures. You can get irreversible liver damage, kidney damage. I mean, widespread organ failure and death, essentially. So that's why, you know, syphilis becomes life-threatening years down the road if it's not treated. So if it's treated early, before we get that end organ damage, it can be treated with penicillin. That actually remains the first line. The cephalosporins and penicillin remains the first line treatment for syphilis. Or doxycycline is another good second line drug for that.
If you get allergic to the penicillin.
Exactly. So that's the skinny on syphilis. Now, another infection of interest to them that they were seeing was gonorrhea. And we're going to talk a little bit about gonorrhea. The gonorrheal infections are caused by the bacteria Neisseria gonorrhoeae, and it commonly infects warm, moist areas of the body. So again, the genitals, the anus, urethra, eyes, throat, mouth. So any other areas on the male and female reproductive tract that are like kind of warm and moist. It can affect people of any age, any gender. Particularly common, though, among teens and young adults between the ages of 15 and 24. At least that's by nowadays data. This can be transmitted by having oral, anal, or vaginal sex. And it's preventable by using condoms, or largely preventable anyway, as effective as condoms can be. Though among...
Just a barrier.
Yeah, just a barrier, exactly. When engaging in sexual activity, if you use a barrier device, it can decrease the incidence of you getting that. People can be asymptomatic for up to 30 days after an exposure. For individuals with male anatomy, symptoms include urinary urgency, frequency, and like sort of signs and symptoms of a UTI. You can get urethral discharge, swelling or discoloration of the genitals, pain, itching, or soreness in the area. people with female anatomy, sort of similar symptoms, pain, burning with urination. A lot of people initially start thinking that they have a UTI because the symptoms are very similar. But you also get that discharge, the swelling, discoloration, and discomfort. And it you can also get vaginal bleeding or spotting with that. And pain in the lower abdomen. And that is largely like if somebody with female anatomy, if it progresses, it can actually lead to pelvic inflammatory disease, which can become, it's a very uncomfortable sort of swelling of all the intra-abdominal and pelvic organs. If gonorrhea infects the mouth or throat, one can persist, can develop a persistent sore throat, inflammation and redness of the throat, fevers and lymph node swelling as well. And then you can also have gonorrheal infections that can occur or spread to the eyes just from like hand contact and touching and like poor hand washing practices. Symptoms of gonococcal conjunctivitis are similar to any sort of other eye infection, right? So like a gunky discharge, redness, swelling, itching, pain, all of that. Untreated, gonorrhea, like I said, can progress to pelvic inflammatory disease in women, which can cause severe chronic pain and irreparable damage to the reproductive organs. And if it's left untreated, it can be devastating. Exactly. It can lead to infertility in both men and women, actually. And then again, completely curable with antibiotics. The first line being ceftriaxone and like your penicillins, your cephalosporins. And so that, you know, because that was so rampant and you do develop symptoms quickly with that, it's easier to identify, you know, obviously, and people were seeking treatment more frequently with that than with syphilis.
Doesn't lay as latent.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So lastly, we're going to briefly touch on chancroid. Have you heard of chancroid? Because I had not really even been, I feel like I'd read about it a couple times, but it's something that I just don't.
Is it rare?
It's, well, I mean, it was not rare back in the day. So this is another sexually transmitted infection, which is transmitted through oral, anal, or genital sexual contact. This is caused by the bacteria Haemophilus ducreyi.
Great.
Yep. It's actually very rare in North America and Europe and is not seen a whole lot at all nowadays. It's characterized by painful sores or chancroids that develop in the genital area. So it's different than genital warts, a little different. It's more painful, I guess. And as well as lymph node swelling, fevers, and other like systemic symptoms. It can also cause like UTI symptoms, burning with urination, all of that. Typically the first line antibiotic for that is terramycin, but penicillin and cephalosporins can also be used. So again, another thing that is very treatable with penicillins. If gone untreated, this can cause chronic ulcerations, though. So it's another one of those things that, like, you kind of have to treat it early and be aggressive with it, or it can cause chronic issues. So the first field trial that was sort of driven by all this pressure for new STD treatments and prevention was the Terre Haute prison experiments. And that actually happened domestically. So we're going to touch on this lightly as it was considered sort of the predecessor to the Guatemalan syphilis experiments. So that occurred like a couple of years down the road. So this is, again, early 1940s that we're talking. So first, the idea of using human subjects was obviously like controversial, especially with STI studies. Like, how are we gonna figure this out?
Yeah.
So the executive officer of the U.S. Army Medical Corps, Colonel John Rogers, actually gave special permissions for doctors John Mahoney, John Cutler, and Cassius Van Slyke to begin implementing these experiments domestically. So Dr. John Mahoney was actually named the head of the Venereal Disease Research Laboratory for the U.S. Department of Public Health.
Okay.
That was a thing.
Yeah.
And he was given this task of determining the effectiveness of treatments for STDs and STIs, and also, again, trying to find, is there a prophylactic dose and a post-exposure prophylaxis that we can figure out? So he's
similarly to like Plan B.
Well, exactly.
Essentially.
Sort of. Yeah, essentially. Exactly. So the test subjects that they found were prisoners at the U.S. Penitentiary in Terre Haute, Indiana. Because why not, right?
Sure.
So now, these subjects, these prisoners, were given consent forms.
Okay.
And they were given disclosures. So they had to, they knew.
So they were told that they'd be injected.
Exactly. So they were able to get 241 prisoners to agree to this. And the trade-off was that they would receive $100, a certificate of merit, and a letter of commendation to the parole board at the end of the study. So these
bribery.
Bribery, essentially. We're going to make you look good in front of the parole board and give you $100 if you let us just inject you with some stuff. This started with the researchers depositing various strains and concentrations of gonorrhea directly into the penises of test subjects. So they would take syringes and just, sorry, bing. Men out there, or gentlemen, people with penises that are listening.
Bing.
But yes, I understand that everyone's going, ugh, ow, right now.
Bing.
Bing. So that's how they were like, this is the best way to do it.
I mean, unless they had one person that was willing to get a bing and then
bing.
Sharing it with all the rest of them.
Exactly. The old fashioned way, right?
The old fashioned way that STIs are spread.
So they did this for like months. And so they would inject gonorrhea into the penises of these test subjects. From there, they would monitor their symptoms and essentially the response to the treatments and different modalities of giving these people penicillin. So after several months, Dr. Mahoney was realizing that this method of inducing gonorrheal infections on humans was unreliable because it would not always result in an infection. So people were getting their penises injected with gonorrhea and it wouldn't even always cause an infection. And it was very unreliable getting like these different modalities that they were using. Like they could not count on one specific modality to cause a gonorrheal infection, because even if we were going to just allow these people to like have sex with each other, then there were so many variables on whether or not somebody was going to actually transmit a gonorrheal infection. Like, what was their bacterial load at the time? You know, had they showered? Are they immunocompromised? Like, there's a lot of different little variables. So for them, you know, and like, what if they were on a medication or something that, you know, changed something? So they could not ascertain any real meaningful testing or prophylaxis from this study.
Okay.
Essentially, they did this for months and were not getting consistent data. So additionally, Dr. Mahoney started becoming frustrated with the small pool of participants that they had. So they only had 241 people and were like,
I want more.
We need to do this on a bigger scale if we're going to get anything meaningful from this. So now being in the U.S., there were constraints of needing consent, disclosure forms, and needing to be upfront with people. All that really inconvenient stuff. Like having to
all that moral shit,
like having to tell people what you're going
to
inject
them
into their penises. Like, it's just such a huge bummer. Am I right?
Why do I need to share such information?
Yes, this can be a secret. We can keep this on the down low.
What a bummer.
And of course, they were met with some bad publicity due to the ethics of this experiment, because it happened in the U.S. So everybody
government
knew about
injects
it,
STIs
into penises
people.
Of Terre Haute, Indiana prisoners. And it just was like kind of a shitty look. So they were like, okay, they like, how can we do this on a larger scale, avoid these ethical constraints and avoid all of the legal red tape that is involved in doing things?
Can we increase our shady shit?
How can we ensure that we don't get bad publicity in the future regarding these experiments?
Right.
Because like we're in the public eye with this too. So an associate who also worked for the U.S. Public Health Service by the name of Dr. Juan Funes suggested moving the entire experiment to Guatemala. So some people surmise that that Guatemala in particular was selected as a location because the Guatemalan prison system allowed for prisoners to pay for sex workers and to have sex workers come and visit them at prison.
Really?
There's like a whole, it's like, it was a whole system. So doing it that way made it sort of seem
U.S. prisoners.
Yeah.
You don't get such treatment.
No, you do not. Womp womp. But it made it seem like these infections are occurring more naturally because they're just being exposed to sex workers.
Right.
So that was part of the way they sort of were like, we can do this on the down low a little bit and make it just seem like these people are getting exposed to STIs via the sex workers. Other people surmise that the selection of Guatemala was racially motivated, because there's a lot of racial crap, obviously, happening around this time. or it may have been a combination of the two. Either way, it seemed like a good way for the U.S. to be able to conduct these experiments outside of the public eye and without all that, you know, consent bullshit and red tape and all that good stuff.
That.
And it also made it a lot easier for them to, you know, just have access to it. Just a shitload of participants.
Yeah.
Participants, quote unquote.
Yeah.
So Dr. Juan Funes was actually the head of the Guatemalan Venereal Disease Control Department at the time, which another department that existed.
Venereal Disease Control Department.
This existed. This was a thing. And the whole thing was actually proposed by him and his colleagues to the U.S. National Institute of Health, which is still very much a thing that exists.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, the National Institute of Health gave them a shitload of funds and a huge grant and said, yes, this sounds like a great idea.
Mm-hmm.
I am on board. We were on board with this, fully on board. So this was fully funded by the National Institute of Health. So at the time, there was also a branch of government called the Pan-American Sanitary Bureau, who also contributed a lot of funds to promote this research as well. So additionally, the Guatemalan government and certain ministries in Guatemala were involved in paying for some of this. So Guatemala.
So they volunteered their own people.
Yeah. This was not done so much on the down low of the Guatemalan government. Like, Guatemala actually knew most of the stuff that was going on, it seems like. And they were also pretty involved in this and also contributed to these quote unquote studies, but
of their own people.
Of their own people. But there are some archived documents that were rediscovered in 2005 that suggested that there were some things, the nitty-gritty details of the program, that the U.S. did not disclose to Guatemalan officials. So while they knew that this whole thing was happening, there were certain details that they were not privy to. So I think a lot of that was like the stuff that was rather inhumane.
Mm-hmm.
Again, the purpose of this particular study was to, first of all, observe the efficacy of penicillin in particular in preventing infections or post-exposure prevention of developing an infection. So what they were trying to do is find like what something that they could give to their soldiers to make sure that they don't end up getting these infections and that the military wouldn't be responsible for paying for their medical care.
Mm-hmm.
And also like, hey, if somebody has a high-risk sexual encounter, can I take a mega dose of penicillin and just
be good?
Prevent the whole thing from occurring? So the total number of subjects that participated in this is not clear. While it's estimated that there may have been around 1,500 study subjects overall, other sources state that it could be up to 5,000 individuals participating in the study. So unfortunately, this may have also included children, which is appalling.
Yeah.
As a result, 696 Guatemalans were intentionally infected with syphilis, gonorrhea, and chancroids without their consent. These initial attempts to infect subjects of the initial attempts of the experiment started with workers from the United States, the public health workers that were coming from the United States, who were inoculating Guatemalan sex workers with syphilis that has been grown in a lab in rabbits. So they would literally take pus, drainage, fluids from rabbits, put it in a syringe, and inject it into sex workers without giving them any details, just saying, hey, I'm going to give you some money. Will you let me give you this shot? And then we're going to pay you some money so that
I'm not going to tell you what it is.
I'm not going to tell you what it is. But I'm going to pay you some money to get this shot. And then we're going to pay you to go to these Guatemalan prisons and have sexual encounters with our prisoners, because that's the system that they had. So to be clear, our government.
So they were already giving them money to go have sex with the prisoners before this experiment.
And now they are paying them to get inoculated with syphilis and gonorrhea, and then are being paid extra to go have sex with these prisoners. The government is paying for this. This is government sanctioned research.
They're tax dollars.
These are tax dollars.
Your money.
So these women, these female sex workers, are young women, teenagers, children. in some situations who are desperate to feed their families, like these are like tweens, children, like young women in a lot of cases who are just trying to make sure that they can contribute and get food on the table for their families and are jumping at whatever opportunity they're being given. You're going to give me $100. Great. That's going to feed us
for, of course.
You know,
in the 40s.
In the 40s. Yeah, exactly. That's amazing. Yeah. So they are being victimized just as much as the prisoners in this scenario, for sure. So these participants, or so we'll call them, did not provide any sort of consent. And in certain situations, didn't even know that they were part of a study. They had no idea. They were just being met by these public health workers and given this inoculation and then permitted to go visit people in prisons.
Wow.
The people in the prisons did not provide any sort of consent, had no idea what was going on. And given all of these female sex workers to participate in sexual acts with.
Which they were already previously doing.
Exactly. So but now, thinking nothing's all different. Of a sudden, nothing's different, except maybe I'm getting a lot more. So from there, the female sex workers and these prisoners are being monitored sort of quietly for symptoms.
That's how they're studying the transmissibility.
Exactly. So people are trying to see, you know, if I give you this pill after you have this high risk sexual encounter, are you going to actually develop a fulminant infection or are you going to be fine?
Right.
And this is how they're starting to get their actual data. So they were also studying various methods of transmission. So there wasn't just the sexual encounters. They were attempting to infect participants by. So what they would do is they would abrade areas of the body, like around the genitals, around the anus. They would give you like a little scratch. Like they would cause an abrasion.
Did you have to have an open area and breaking the skin?
And they would pour infected fluids and gonorrhea and syphilis infected material on these wounds to see if that would transmit. So they're trying to figure out.
Did you need a break in the skin or could it be just be on?
Exactly. So they're doing that on forearms, faces, mouths, you know, where on the body, does it matter where on the body we do this? Like they're trying to, and again.
I have a question and I don't mean to be graphic.
No, you're good.
Were these acts witnessed? Like they knew that they put the area on someone's mouth. Did they watch these acts?
Probably.
You know, like,
I would imagine so, because you would have to know exactly what was performed,
Where I put it, what did you do?
So, but it was the health workers that were taking prisoners into like exam rooms and saying, I'm going to give you a scratch and then I'm going to pour fluids, these lab grown fluids on top of this scratch.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. So then they would see if, you know, would this result in an active infection? And if I medicate you, would that prevent an infection? So they're getting all sorts of things. And then again, in these archived documents that were rediscovered in 2005, it sounds like some subjects were even infected through forced perforation of the spinal column.
What?
Which they would literally take a syringe full of material and inject prisoners' spines and spinal columns. Like they're trying everything.
Wow.
I don't really know the exact rationale behind that, but gross.
Yes.
And ouch.
Yeah.
And
bit.
How much damage, who got paralyzed? Exactly. How many people just did not ever walk again after that situation or got osteomyelitis or some shit? And I wonder if that was to try and recreate sort of neurosyphilis, like tertiary syphilis.
Okay.
You know, like are we trying to access the you know, brain and spinal column directly with syphilis.
Does it happen faster?
That's
so they don't
my
have to wait
thought.
For years.
Exactly. That's my only hypothesis as to why they would go straight there. But I found that interesting.
Yeah.
So people that were running the study were operating under the estimation that one sex worker can have sex with, this was interesting. This was a weird number. So one sex worker can have sex with up to 8 men in 70 minutes, which like, I feel like there's a lot of variables in there and these numbers are very arbitrary. Like, can you infect people? Because you can infect people in so many different ways that these numbers seem a little bit random. Like you could probably do a lot more in a lot less time or a lot less in a lot more time, depending on what your style is and like what not. Like, why are we putting, it just seems weird.
Efficient.
Efficient. Yes.
Efficient.
these initial attempts were essentially deemed a failure at the end of the day because the prisoners started resisting and getting a little suspicious.
Good.
Why am I being injected in the spine mm-hmm. with some weird material? Why are you pressuring me to have sex with all these nice young women all mm-hmm. of the time all of a sudden? Mm-hmm. This seems sus. Why do you keep wanting to draw my blood? Why do you keep wanting to look at my junk?
Right.
This is weird.
Mm-hmm.
So prisoners are starting to refuse the testing and they're losing a lot of subjects like in the middle of their studies. So they're losing a lot of data. You know, a lot of people were like potentially inoculated and then nobody ever found out if they had an active infection because they would refuse to get their blood drawn and they wouldn't follow up with them mm. because the prisoner would resist. So now researchers...
I think I meant shit hit the fan with like, this is where forcibility was coming
yeah.
into play.
Yeah, no. So yeah, you're right with that. So now researchers are left with still a lot of pressure from the United States. You've been given all these grants. You still don't have a whole lot of solid data mm-hmm. on what works and what doesn't. And how are we going to, like, you know, these doctors are like, how are we going to do this unless we sort of expand and think of what we can do outside of the Guatemalan prison?
Right.
And how can we finish these studies and make sure that we're getting the data that we're investing in? What other underserved populations can we victimize and exploit here so that we can get the data that we need?
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we're going to stop.
This is the cliffhanger.
This is the cliff.
This is the cliffhanger. Cliffhanger.
That's the
That's
cliffhanger.
The new thing. The cliffhanger.
This is the new thing. This is the cliffhanger pose. For those of you that are listening, I'm just like doing a little hooky with my arm. Anyway, this is wild stuff.
Man.
This is insane stuff, dude. This is cray cray.
I want to know what happens with as there's more resistance.
Yeah.
And what do they do to work around that? And then, yeah.
It's some bullshit, man.
Mm.
Yeah, I'm telling you. Can't wait for part two.
And then when did bridge fall? You know?
The bridge will fall.
Mm.
Yeah. It's wild. It's a crazy story, man. I'm telling you.
Mm. We're back, guys.
We are so back. It feels great.
Thank you for watching.
Yes.
Thank you for listening. One quick update, especially if any of you are new. Big news is that Gypsy Rose Blanchard was free this week.
Whoa,
right?
Gypsy Rose.
In the last week or two. So we covered her story way back early, mm-hmm. early, like episode 7, 8-ish, like
yes.
way back early. It was one of the first few Devonisms I ever did.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to check out her story on what we covered, you can go find that in the archives of the Med Crime
Absolutely.
Stuff.
Absolutely. And we can do an update with our news bulletin
yep,
that we put out this month.
There's a lot of stuff coming out more with her story mm-hmm. and a lot more publicity and whatnot because she was granted parole after serving, I think, almost 8 years in prison.
Yeah. And she's like doing a whole press tour
and
now.
I think we said, even if I was to go back and listen, I think we said like she was up for parole in the next year or so.
That's right. You did say
and that.
That,
you know, so mm-hmm. she's out and she's got quite the story.
That's right.
So.
She does. She's got some shit to say.
Yes,
so we'll talk about her in our little update.
Yes.
Love it.
So thank you for listening, everybody. I don't have it quite at the top of my head. If you want to find us, you can search for us on Facebook at Med Crimes Podcast.
You can tweet at us at Med Crimes PC.
Is that still, you can X at us.
X at us. Yeah. You can do that.
You can follow us on Instagram at Med Crimes Podcast.
If you wish to become a Patreon, you can find us at www.patreon.com/MedCrimesPodcast.
Or you can send us some crazy stories, ideas, feedback, anything you want at MedCrimes@gmail.com.
And now you can search Med Crimes Podcast on YouTube.
Awesome.
And
How
give
cool
us a watch. I'm so psyched.
It's pretty awesome. It's a huge new growth milestone.
It's
so
the whole thing.
As with season one, when we first started the podcast, as we're starting the YouTube channel, we'll work out the kinks.
We will.
We love constructive feedback.
Stay safe out there.
Bye.
Mwah.